And we are recording.
We are here with a special Delve Edition.
Yes. Because we wanted to do this, or I wanted to do this, and...
You wanted to do it, and I wanted to watch the thing, so we just forced a pick.
Yeah. It was easier to just add these two to it. We're not going to do the other two on their own.
We did pick the thing randomly.
Yeah, the thing was random.
And then we were like, we might as well do these other two.
Yeah. And what are these other two?
Oh, so we're doing the
so-called John Carpenter Apocalypse Trilogy.
So-called is what I was looking for, yes. We're doing the John Carpenter Apocalypse Trilogy, which I feel is a little misnomer in this case, but we'll talk about that. So we're going to go chronologically, because then we always go
chronologically. There's only a thematic link, there's no story link.
Right, so there's no it doesn't matter what direction we go.
Any order can go.
Yes, this isn't nowadays where any director's films might be the secret beginning of a new franchise.
Yes, thank God. I mean, he's only had one franchise, really.
But it's just happening everywhere nowadays. If you make two movies, chances are you're linking one of them. You're linking one to the other, even if they have nothing to do with each other.
Well, you're probably told to by the studio at this point.
Probably. Speaking of that, just real quick, what do you think about the Universal Monster reboot?
I don't know. I feel like those, if you let them grow into a franchise, but...
I feel like they're forcing it hard.
Like, having seen clips of the Mummy, just sitting in a pizza parlor or something, it's like, it looks like they're trying to go for, an Avengers thing, where it's a big cataclysm thing, not a... Like, those movies work on the small scale. Like, almost all horror works best when it's a cheap movie.
Well, I ran into a problem with, I don't remember enough about the original Mummy to know, because I've seen the Mummy with Brendan Fraser and Wesley Reyes, and it looks strongly like they're redoing that movie, and I'm like, but what if that movie was, I don't know enough about the original to know if the same characters were in it or anything.
The original one is kind of a Dracula style film where you have this ancient being kind of coming back and kidnapping women.
Because it really, based on what I've seen, it feels like this is a redo
of the 90s movie. Yes, I feel like this is not a reboot of the classic, Boris Karloff Mummy or even the Karras films after that.
Mm-hmm.
This is sort of going back to the most recent Mummy series.
Right. Which I liked the first one.
Yeah, I liked the first one. I saw the second one. And, I haven't seen the third one or any of the Scorpion King films.
Oh, God, yeah. Although, from what I understand, once he got his own Scorpion King film, it was just much different. It was broken off and had little...
Well, there's, 14 of those.
Are there really?
I think there's, at least five of the Scorpion King series.
I only think I knew about, one.
I don't think the rest of them were theatrical.
Ah. Well, I mean, as long as you're making
money. I don't think he's in, though, after, the first one.
Well, good for him.
Well, yeah, he has Fast and the Furious films to do.
That's right.
And now that he's, back with friends with Vin Diesel, we're going to both be in the same film again.
Also, were they were not friends?
They apparently had a fight. They had some sort of maybe potential falling out during the filming of Fate of the Furious. So they're going to get The Rock his own spinoff series.
Okay. Do they even drive cars in those movies?
They still drive cars. They don't race cars anymore. Well, there's one race in the beginning, and then it's a Roger Moore spy film.
That is going to be a film franchise that is talked about in future film classes about the evolution.
See, I don't know. That's not like film. It's going to be like film producer classes. So you want to do is you want to find a film that has some guys that do something, and then a few years later they have them become spies.
Yeah.
That's exactly what it's going to sound like.
All right.
It's going to be some Joe Pesci Donald Duck creature teaching that class.
At least that's very accurate with what you did. All right, so we're going to talk about The Thing first, a 1982 starring my new favorite dude, Kurt Russell.
Wilford Brimley?
And a lot of Wilford Brimley was in there, which I really loved.
Your other favorite dude, Wilford Brimley?
Yeah, he did not have diabetes in this.
He might have had diabetes, but he might have had impending diabetes cures.
He had a different problem.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't really... No one else was really worth noting.
And that's going to be the theme of tonight of there are these two actors you know and then no one else.
So, this is a movie that starts, I guess, in media res, somewhat. You start with the hunt for this dog.
Yes.
Two men in a helicopter are chasing this dog and shooting at it with a rifle. We know nothing
and
else.
And if you want the plot of that film, you're going to see the 2011 film, The Thing.
Yes, which is a prequel.
Yes. Okay. Not to be confused with the original The Thing from Another World, of which this is a remake.
Hmm. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
But I wasn't really... I saw that in the Wikipedia article. I'm like, you know, I have no interest in a prequel for this.
I want to see it because that is another one of those big seminal films. And that is the film they are watching in Halloween. That's on TV.
Yeah, right. No, I would love to see the original.
Oh, yeah. The thing from another world I want to see.
Yes. I don't want to see the prequel.
Yeah, I don't see the appeal of a prequel for this film.
No, it doesn't. There's no real connection, and it's not important.
And you know the ending. Like, you know the ending.
Yes.
And you don't necessarily have a connection to these characters.
And there's no sense. I highly doubt that anything they did there. Because a lot of times when you do prequels, you lauded yourself for just nailing the ending so where it's starting right where the next movie's going to, or like lined up correctly. And I'm like, the only reason that it would be worth it to me to watch is if you managed to work within that structure and do something different.
Yeah, but I don't think they did. I think it was pseudo remake, pseudo prequel.
Man, I don't really have an interest in watching a bunch of foot scientists die. They're fine.
Well, Norwegian scientists.
I know, I was doing a little Kurt Russell
there. I know.
No.
He's your new lover.
He's on my list. That silver fox. You don't even know how to deal with that.
You've gone full Vinny tonight, I think. Huh. Diego's now watching the last two. He's watching the Furious 7 and Fate of the Furious just for Kurt Russell? Just for Kurt Russell.
Yeah, probably.
You know, he's in there for like 5 minutes. It doesn't matter.
I'm alright.
Just pass forward through all the Rock scenes.
Yeah, pretty much. No, I like The Rock. He's fun. He's a geek, too.
You think of Vin Diesel?
I think they're both geeks.
Also Vin Diesel.
Vin Diesel's the one who roleplays.
Yeah.
But The Rock's a geek. He is. And even if he hadn't
been... They're both insufferable dorks.
Even if he hadn't been... It's The Rock who does Groot, right?
No, that's Vin Diesel.
Okay. He's done something.
He was in Moana, The Rock.
Thank you. I'm like, what has he been in recently?
Tooth Fairy.
Oh, God.
Vinny's ability to pull up dumb kid movies with famous actors in it.
Well, it's not hard with The Rock, from what I understand.
No.
At all. Wasn't he on, like, that Escape from Witch Mountain remake?
He was, yeah. He was also in, I think, he had a bunch of kids' movies for a while there.
Make the money. Build the house.
I think he's pretty good on money.
Now?
Yeah, WWE is not a way to make money, as far as I understand.
Yeah, I don't know. I think you can, if you're smart, and a lot of them are.
If you're smart, and you're talented, and you're lucky. Because I understand that they are really kind of abusive to the way they treat their stars.
Interesting.
Making them pay for a lot of, you know, their own travel and their own hotel. So the thing.
The helicopter lands, and these, like, near a American research station.
Yeah.
And the dog has escaped into their Americans' area, so it's safe. And they're shooting at the dog, and there's a scene, and, you know.
And the American goes, why the fuck are you shooting at this dog? And then the Norwegians give away the plot. If you know Norwegian, the film is ruined in that first scene.
I don't know Norwegian.
Neither do I, but it's one of those things that, like, if you know Norwegian, they give away the entire plot.
That's pretty cool,
In that first scene.
I kind of love that.
Yeah.
Now I kind of wish I knew Norwegian just to be like, holy shit, why aren't they listening to that?
Yeah. See, I feel like now that wouldn't make as much sense if you assume any research group would just know English. And I wonder how different that was in, like, the early 80s.
I don't know. I've never... Like, you're more... That's something you would think about more than I would think about. I don't think a lot about Antarctic research stations.
I mean, Rutgers has one.
Or any research stations.
At least one of those people down there is probably from Rutgers. Or at least they would be now.
I thought you were going to say, like, any research station would, you know, have a couple of other nationalities in it or something.
Maybe.
Do we do a lot of international...
In Antarctica, there's only so many research stations, so you probably have a mix of people there. Mm. I mean, a bunch of people also are just all weirdos down there. If you want to hear about Antarctic research, listen to the podcast You're the Expert with Oscar Schofield, and hopefully, I went to the live recording of it, because it was in New Brunswick. But apparently, some guy tried to, like, poison some guy while playing cards. But the only reason the guy survived was because he just downed the whole glass of poison in one go, and it was a slacking poison. So he just had a seizure.
Jesus.
And that's why they now do psychological profiles of anyone going down to Antarctica.
Well, they do mention, like, right away in the movie, that, like, it doesn't take a long time to go fucking nuts down there.
I can't imagine it does.
But at the same time, I can only imagine that because it's like, because they have facilities. They have, like, a rec room, they have a kitchen, they have TV, VCR, computers. It's pretty well set up. But that's not the problem. I think they go nuts because there's not one person that works there that's remotely someone that you would want to be near for
no,
an extended period.
They are all insufferable assholes. It would be like if our friend group was out in Antarctica for 3 weeks.
Right, yeah, and we're all assholes. You don't really want to.
No, we're fine in, like, a few hour doses.
And I think that, like, we'd be okay for, like, 4 or 5 days. If it was, like, a setting like that where you had things to do, and you can, well, not in a room.
Yeah.
But just, like, in a location. But after 5 days, someone's shipping somewhere else. Probably multiple people.
Oh, so, yeah, no. Like, 2 people would survive.
And one of them would be my wife for some reason.
Well, no one would kill her. She's wonderful.
She'll be happy to hear you say that.
She's unkillable.
But in the meantime, okay, so we have this encounter. One of the Americans is shot, and the last surviving Norwegian is shot in the eye.
He's shot dead.
Through the eye.
It's a good kill shot, like in The Godfather.
With a fucking, like, revolver.
Yeah, like in The Godfather.
And that's all. Like, nothing suspicious. They're just like, oh, well, I guess the Norwegians went buggy, and they send off Kurt Russell, the helicopter pilot, and one of the researchers to go look at their station.
And they send, Blair? Wilford Brimley character? Because he's a biologist.
He is, but I don't think he's the first to go.
Okay, yeah, no, I know he did the examination later.
Yeah, he does the examination later, and he's the first one to go nutty.
Yeah.
And help me remember, is he was always infected, right?
I think he gets infected early on, yeah.
Like, really early on. So
like,
when,
during that I think when he's doing the examination, right, he gets infected.
Because when he goes nutty, they put him out in a shed.
Yeah.
And he uses the entire movie that he's been locked in the shed to, like, dig into the ice and build a spaceship.
Yes.
Which was hardcore. You're just like, oh, that's amazing.
But the only thing that doesn't quite make sense is, well, I guess, no, you could reason why he's looking up how long it would take to infect the entire planet.
Right.
Because if you are the, you know, if you are the infector.
But here's the other thing I didn't get is, and there's a couple problems I had, but one of them is they're replicating you. So they make a separate organism that's you. This is an alien species where it seems like every cell is its own.
It can survive on its own.
Its own being. And they replicate other species to infiltrate. So they make a Vincenzo clone, right? But they don't know what you know. Because they're just a biological clone of you.
Yeah.
So, one, your information is down. You're going to have a hard time responding to things in any detail, right?
You assume so.
So that's an issue, but it also creates a thing where, okay, it makes perfect sense that he wants to know how long it would take to infect the Earth, because he has no idea.
What is this Earth you speak of?
When last he came there 100,000 years ago, there weren't any.
There wasn't humans.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As they are now. When did we first show up? Like, I don't know, actually.
100 million, 100 million, 100,000, they say. Like, 4 million is humans, when we sort of diverge from chimpanzees.
I don't know.
I think it's 100,000, so there'd be...
So there's humans, but not as we are now, definitely. Like, not even remotely close
we're still living in the wilderness.
Yes.
By a long shot.
Right, so they're, and plus, they landed in the Arctic, which
is probably
still pretty frozen. I don't know exactly how the planet shifted.
I think 100,000 years we're still in an ice age cycle, so.
So they never had a chance to, like, we don't even know.
They might have named the right spot for them not to be a problem.
Right, and we don't even know if this was on purpose. The aliens' motives and background is not a thing in this movie. It doesn't matter.
Well, they don't seem sentient in the way we think of sentience.
But they are
intelligent.
They're intelligent. They have technology.
Yeah.
So there is some form of
unless this is a weapon. Unless this is a weapon from another species.
Or unless another species who had a spaceship got infected, and that's what caused their ship to crash land.
Yeah.
So then they crash land because these things don't know how to fly a fucking spaceship.
Exactly.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay.
So we've come up with different theories on what this alien is.
But in any case, what's most important to know is Wilford Brimley was one of them.
Yes.
Fuck diabetes. That man has a bigger problem.
Ozzy doesn't, because he's dead.
No, and you don't really know whatever happened to his body.
No.
But, so, that's important to know, and it's a really cool thing that, like, it shows me that John Carpenter has a talent for storytelling.
This, I think, is probably maybe his strongest film.
Out of the three, definitely.
Out of the, maybe in his career, it's definitely in his top, on the top of the pile for him.
I would need to know in terms of before I can make that call.
I put up with, like, Halloween is probably up there for his top films.
Well, I mean, like, I just mean, like, top film and just, do you think this is the best film he made, or this is his best screenplay, or...
I'd say, well, he didn't write the screenplay for this film.
No, he didn't?
No.
Okay.
He only wrote one screenplay tonight.
Prince of Darkness.
Yes.
But not under his name.
No.
No, the screenplay was by Bill Lancaster.
So, yeah.
So, Bill Lancaster did a nice job.
I mean, I'm not going to, discount John Carpenter's ability to assemble this film.
No, I mean, I think he's a pretty decent talent.
He can pull the right people in and get the right effects people. And what this film is good for is sort of the tension, the uncertainty, and the special effects.
Oh my god, Bill Lancaster didn't do shit. He wrote The Bad News Bears, The Bad News Bears Go to Japan,
and the thing. And then retired. And then died.
Man, Bill Lancaster really deprived us of some talent, I think.
Actually, he didn't even die that, like, he died a far off time after the thing.
Like, he just stopped.
Yeah.
In any case.
This film was hugely panned when it came out.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, from what I was reading, in part it's because it was bad timing. When it came out right around the time that E.T. came out, I believe.
Oh, yeah, this is sort of the opposite. Sort of the opposite of E.T.
And something else, too, where it's just like, it was just a really, not a great time for it to come out. Like, there were other better films.
Yeah. But yeah, to me, this isn't competing with E.T. This is sort of...
No, it's not, but...
Yeah.
But
then again, nothing John Carpenter has done other than, like, Halloween hit, you know... landed, really.
True. I mean, we looked through his list, and we're just like, eh.
There's a lot of really good, strong, interesting stuff, and we've talked about They Live, we've talked about...
So, yeah, E.T. was released 2 weeks earlier. Blade Runner was released that week.
Oh, yeah. See, this and Blade Runner...
So, like, it really didn't have a good chance at just having a great release. Bad decision-making on the part of the studio.
Yeah,
so, like, but aside from that, it did just get bad reviews.
It was panned, and again, it was a remake of a classic film, which itself has now become, it itself has become a classic film now.
Absolutely.
30 years later.
And this has a crap ton of other things that have been based on it, and written in the same world, and comics.
Just sort of ideas of how you do, a story. That idea of this, creeping, unseen terror. And it really isn't, like, an allegory for as much then as it was, Like, then you say the 50s, obviously it's an allegory for hidden communists.
But
I don't see that as much in the 80s as much of as a creeping terror. This is much more of a paranoia of what humans are going to do to each other.
Right, now this is a locked room, we're going to turn on each other kind of thing.
Yeah.
Because who knows who's this thing? Or... am I the only person who is not this thing anymore?
And at the end of the day, none of these characters are people who you'd want to be around, even on their best day.
Right. I found it really interesting. There's a point in the movie where I forget exactly what they do, but they do something that would be detrimental completely to the aliens. And I think it's Kurt Russell, because he pretty much takes a leadership role about halfway through the movie and just runs with it for most of it. Where he's just like, alright, I'm going to assume that at least some of the rest of you are human, because if you were all aliens, you would have just murdered me. So
yeah, like, he is smart enough in this film.
He's actually, like, the character's very intelligent.
Yeah. He is the problem solver in the film once they know there's an alien in the group. Because it takes them a while to figure that out, that there is an alien in the group.
Right. And that was, like, I don't know, it kind of felt like they really put they really showed you who his character was when you first see him. He's playing computer chess, and he thinks he's doing well, and the computer checkmates him, and he just pours the scotch he just drank into the computer, calls it a cheating bitch, and walks away. And you're just like, that's all you really need to know.
That established that he's a terrible person you don't want to spend time with. But also that he's decently smart enough to play, you know.
Right, like he's...
weird 80s computer chess that, I don't know how that works, pushing random buttons to make the things move around.
He's playing a reasonable game of computer chess. That was a well-entrenched game.
Yes.
So, like, he's definitely smart, and he shows that in this. In fact, I felt like he eventually comes up with a task, because they go through a couple points where they're like, this is how we'll test it. And nothing ever comes to real fruition, because the alien keeps on...
But always a step ahead of their plan.
Right. So he finally decides that, he comes up with a test where they heat a copper wire, they put it in a blood sample, and since every cell is alien, it would try and save itself. And it works, and the second they figure out it works, it's like one of the shockiest scenes. Like, you see that scene, and you're like, holy shit.
It's a really good jump scare. Like, it's a taut, tense moment.
Because they use CG, not CGI,
no,
they use effects.
All practical effects.
But it happens in the flash, just a flash. Mm-hmm. So, like, it's a great effect.
But it also takes them a while to figure out that every cell is...
No, it does.
Yeah.
It's like over the course of this. And they have to fight the fact that the alien is very, very intelligent. And I can only assume working with itself. Like, I feel like it has to have some method of communicating with itself.
I'm not going to try to go into the biology, but I think it's definitely, like, essentially one organism, but a part can jump off and survive.
Wolf of Brimley, it's buying him time.
Yes.
So, but no, there's a point where they actually... They frame Kurt Russell.
Yeah.
Because they get a bloody uniform, they bloody a uniform of his and throw it out somewhere, and as soon as you find it, you're like, he was in a struggle. He must be an alien now.
Yeah, they already established that if you see someone with like a cut long john or something.
Right.
They probably are an alien.
If someone's uniform is messed up. Which makes sense.
Yeah.
But it's very interesting, and I really loved... at the end of the movie, there's only two men left. And there's a couple of things I love about that. I love the fact that it's those two men. It's Kurt Russell, and
Keith
Richards?
Not the Keith Richards, but...
It's Keith Richards, who he has been, like, who they've been butting heads the entire fucking movie.
Keith David, thank you. Keith David's Childs.
So they've been butting heads the entire movie. They don't like each other, because, like, a lot of times, Kurt Russell's been on the I'm in charge side, and being like, you're probably an alien. And they meet each other at the end, and there's just this phase where they're just like, it doesn't fucking matter if you're an alien or if I'm an alien, because we're going to die out of here. Because they've pretty much blown to shit the entire research station.
Yeah, they've destroyed. The helicopter gets blown up fairly early on.
Yes.
So they can't escape.
And then
most of the buildings have either been burned or blown up.
And Wilford Brimley destroys the rest of the motor transportation and kills any dogs that are alive.
Yes.
So, because we find out that they deduce that it doesn't want anyone to escape, it wants a rescue team.
Which makes sense if their goal is to infect.
Right. You want a rescue team. They're not going to understand that there's a biological agent at work. Until it's way too late.
And like this team didn't realize there was something, like, this was happening until
right.
It was far too late.
And the only reason they figured it out remotely is because the alien was sloppy. It left a part of itself.
Yeah.
Because they found a corpse at the Norwegian station, that had two heads.
Yeah.
Or two faces.
And two faces, and at that point you know.
You're like, okay, well that's some weird alien shit.
Oh, we should burn this down now.
Right.
That was their mistake.
Yeah.
Don't burn it down the first time. When you see Cthulhu Horror, burn it.
Right. Yeah. Don't bring it back to the station.
Yeah.
I love it. It takes them a long while. They're definitely, the science is played up here because it takes them a long time to give up wanting to research and keep research on this. It takes, like, past the point where they know it's a danger to be exposed to these, they're still trying to
keep... They still want to bring it back to see what it is.
Right. They're still trying to keep samples. And it's just, like, past the point where they should know better. They should know so much better. Why don't they know better?
Because they want to do research. I don't see a problem with that.
And Ennio Morricone does a fantastic
job. Oh, yeah. I mean, we're not going to disperse any of Ennio Morricone this podcast.
He always does a fantastic job. I really liked the screenplay, and I'm very disappointed that the writer of the screenplay did Bad News Bears this and then retired.
Maybe it was like, I've done a good screenplay. What's happening now?
It's like, they're not going to remember me for Bad News Bears. I'm out.
No, they remember you were Bad News Bears goes to Japan.
Oh, God. But no, and I like, you don't know, aside from Wilford Brimley and Kurt Russell, you don't know anyone here. But they're all solid cast members.
Yeah. There's no bad...
Everyone makes their own personalities, and that's so important in a movie like this. You have to be able to... There's a lot of cast that you're thrown, that's thrown at you. You have to be able to...
And they don't introduce them.
No. You have to be able to tell them apart. You have to have people to root for and to hate. They have to be people.
Yes. And they all are.
No, absolutely. There's no one in there that I felt was weak, except I would argue that the captain was pretty, like, low.
This captain, Captain E. Milktoast. Yeah, but the thing is, like, there's always end up being a Captain E. Milktoast character in these kind of films.
And I felt like, I mean, Kurt Russell was written too cool for the movie, really. But I like Kurt Russell, so that's okay. That's like, he was too badass for the movie. He was a helicopter pilot in the middle of Antarctica. He probably should have been a little less functional than he was.
A little more boring of a person.
Yeah. But I'm okay, because I really like
him. But he also might have been, we don't know his full, what it was. He probably all had another research position. Usually you have multiple jobs in that situation.
Yeah, they don't really talk about who's who.
No, the only one we
or
have...
what they're researching.
The only one we have an idea of is that Blair's a biologist.
Yes.
And that comes up because they need, you obviously need your... This story needs a biologist in it.
Absolutely. They got a biologist and they have a doctor.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much all we know. So, but as things go, from what you were telling me, like the extras on the newest Blu-ray.
The Shout months. Factory one, they did a commentary track, there's the TV cut, two discs, there's a whole pile of things on there from Shout Factory, so they've never done, they don't do bad releases, they're terrible nerds who just make over-designed Blu-rays.
But you should buy this one.
Yeah, this one is definitely worth putting in your collection.
This is definitely going on my movie wish list. It was really great, and I encourage anyone, especially anyone who likes this style of movie, this suspense style, to pick this one
up. See, this one I want to see in a theater, only because I feel like in a dark, quiet place it would work better.
Yeah. No, I go to the theater to see this.
Yeah.
It reminded me a little, not just in that terms of a small group of people against each other. There's a movie whose name I never remember where they all wake up with amnesia and they discover that half of them are criminals and half of them are, not criminals. And they go through trying to figure out, that's the classic, well, if I'm a criminal, I don't want to be caught. And if I'm not a criminal... I just want to get away from you criminals. But in this, it feels similar, because it's just like, some of you are aliens, maybe more than some of you. I don't know, but you know.
Yeah, and this is how you get a co-op board game.
The thing is escape from the aliens.
No, it's Panic Station, but Panic Station's a bad game.
I think of it more as escape from the aliens. But
there's no spread mechanism.
Sure, there's no spread mechanism, you're right. You're more apt.
And like, you know who the alien is, and... Escape from the Aliens.
No, you don't.
You know who's playing Alien?
No, you don't.
You?
No. That's half the fun, is that you don't know who an alien is. You have to deduce it based on their movements and some luck until they give it up and just start hunting you down.
Fuck that game.
Did I tell you, they, just for anyone who that sounded fun, they came out with a new version where they put a bunch more maps out and it's all whiteboard. So that you, like, all the mods that people were doing on their games you don't need to do anymore.
That makes more sense.
Yeah, definitely. So, moving on. We didn't have any questions, right?
We had one question. Got to dig it up. Somewhere my likes panel. From Trick the TM. Kurt Russell, Keith David, or neither? Who was the thing at the end of the movie?
I don't know. And what's more, I'll argue, it doesn't matter. Because it's going down in one of two ways. If either one of them is the alien, they're going to, you know, the humans will die before help gets there.
Yes.
Rescue will come, and if one of them was the alien and all the aliens weren't blown up, the world's over. And if the aliens were blown up, and they weren't aliens, then everything goes along. So really, I'll tell you what, you just go, you time travel to that world 5 years in the future, you'll know.
If there's people.
Yes. If there's people, then neither.
They keep hiding people, they don't know who's also an alien. They keep infecting each other.
I really don't know, and I love that they just don't give a shit at that point. Because, like, both of them are so fucking beaten up at that point. They're just like, I couldn't take you even if you were an alien. Let's have some scotch.
They're both aliens. There's different strains. They're trying to outcompete each other.
That would be weird. There's a movie like that. No, I know what I'm thinking of. I'm thinking of Aliens vs. Predator. The first one.
Yeah, you're thinking of... Oof.
I like the first one. The second one, whoa. The first one was it's a fun movie.
The first one's like a shitty alien movie, though.
It's not a good movie.
Like, if it had been R-rated, it could have been a good movie.
That's possible, yeah.
No, the second one was just a disaster. It could have been a good movie if they had put effort in.
I don't even know about that, but it was horrible. And I'm sad I went to the theater to see it. I'm so sad. I could have had that money. I could still have that $15.
No, you wouldn't. You'd have blown on some other bad movie.
You don't know that.
I do know that.
You don't know me.
I do know you. We've been doing this for far too long for me not to know you.
You're not my dad. You don't know.
I am not you. I am not your dad.
We're moving on to Prince of Darkness.
Yes.
Taking place 5 years later. Same world.
Well, maybe. What, are just competing of how the world's going to end?
That would be really cool, actually. If all three were in the same world, I would like that. Really weird, but I like it.
It's a really doomed world. And the way it goes isn't the way you thought it would go.
You go really off the rails in that third one. No one anticipated that from the thing.
No. We have different aliens in this film.
Alright, so this is the second installment of Carpenter's Apocalypse Trilogy. And it's called Prince of Darkness. And it's basically a who's who of Big Trouble in Little China.
Of John Carpenter's, like, actors?
It is, because you still have...
You have Donald Pleasance in this one as well.
You have Donald Pleasance. He's the first dude you see. And then you see Victor Wong and...
Dennis Dunn?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're just like, well, okay. Where's Jack?
We got Donald Pleasance dead.
Where's Jack Burr?
We got Donald Pleasance.
So...
Because no one would believe... Kurt Russell's an old priest at this point.
True. So why don't you help us along in this matter?
Okay, so, we begin. A priest has died, and then we go see the cardinal to pass on the secret knowledge.
Oh, question.
Okay.
Do all cardinals ride around in limos?
Probably a lot of them do.
Okay. I was curious, as he was just being carted to and fro in a limo.
Yeah, they're usually fairly well, you know, treated fairly well.
Continue.
They are princes of the church. They picked the Pope!
I'm just asking.
Okay, fine. Yes, but they
don't have to defend it.
I'm not defending it. I'm just stating the facts. So, Donald Pleasance gets this, you know, this secret information about this creepy abandoned church. And that is that this church holds the Prince of Darkness in the basement.
Did they really say that?
No.
They just, it's got a, It's not a big vial of goo.
Yeah, there's an ooze tube.
There's a cylinder of goo.
Yeah, there's a cylinder of goo in the creepiest, like, churchy basement. Yep, full of candles.
Are we in the animals?
So we're in this creepy basement, you know, the church has a creepy basement. And next to the goo tube is this book in every dead language. With some corrections and edits and...
Yeah, it's and things written over other things.
Yes. And so at this point, the priest calls in a physicist at the university.
Who would work with him
before. Yeah, they'd worked together before. And so they gather a team to deal with this problem.
Which is my favorite part, because you're watching this, and it's just like... The premise for gathering the physicists, at least, because there's more scientists that meet them at the church.
Yes.
But the premise for gathering the physicists is you're already as good as physicists with a degree, as, you know, blah, 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 blah. But one of them had to have Schrodinger's box explained to him in the course of this movie.
Yes. Because, you know, he had missed the lecture on the Schrodinger's box concept.
So my argument, as I made on Twitter, is... These are the most expendable physicists, not the best.
They're grad students, which means expendable.
They're very expendable. And at this point, you have met many. We met all these students.
Yeah, you've seen a lot of them in class.
Would you disagree with no one gives a shit about any of these people?
No.
Like, they're just two-dimensional, cardboard cutout people. You don't care.
You kind of care about the mustache guy.
Only
And you kind of care about Egg Chan.
You care about Egg Chan.
Yeah.
But no one cares about the mustache guy. The only reason you even slightly think you might care about him is because it's obvious that he's supposed to be the protagonist.
You care about Donald Pleasance, and you care about Egg Chan.
I don't really care about Donald Pleasance. Much like in Halloween, I observed Donald Pleasance.
You know he's important. If Donald Pleasance walks into a room, you know he's important.
Yes, he's definitely important.
Ergo, you care about Donald Pleasance.
But I guess the argument is that none of these characters are likable.
No.
Except I like A-Chan.
Yeah. A-Chan's likable, and Donald Pleasance isn't unlikable.
They work a room well together. I was surprised at how well their gravitas, like, really worked with each other.
Yeah, Egg Chan is still playing. I'm going to keep calling him Egg Chan, even though it's not the character's name at all in this film.
Oh.
Howard Birak.
He's Egg Chan.
Yeah. We're going to keep calling Egg Chan.
He is.
Because he looks like... They don't make him look any different.
Oh. Oh, no. Okay, so I challenge any of you, and I'm going to spoiler alert, you should watch this movie once. If you want to watch it more, cool. But you should watch it once.
Everyone should see this film.
There is a scene about halfway through the movie... Where Victor Wong is standing across from Donald Pleasance. They're at a desk, and it looks at it, like the camera angles just focus on one and then the other and one and then the other. Pay attention, because their faces are mirrors of each other. Because one of them has both of their faces are like kind of like deformed in their expressions, whereas Victor Wong has like. A more open eye, and then he has a pinched close eye. And if you look at Donald Pleasance, he has the mirror opposites. It's not as pronounced, but it does. There. It's there. And it's amazing. You can't ever not see it anymore.
Thanks. You've ruined Donald Pleasance for me.
He's the mirror opposite of Asian. It's wonderful.
So the premise of this film that we, well, once all the physicists are there, is that the Catholic Church exists to hide this knowledge of the power of evil, of its true nature.
Right, and they want the physicists to prove that it is evil.
Yes.
So that they can continue them.
Because, so, at some point in the deep past, Satan arrived here, who's an alien. And Jesus is also an alien. Mm-hmm. And Jesus imprisoned the son of the evil... In this tube.
He imprisoned Satan.
He imprisoned Satan in this tube.
Right. Because Satan is the son...
Son of ultimate evil.
Yes. Of worst god.
Yes. Of the anti-god. Because we missed that A-Chan is, in fact, a theoretical physicist of matter and antimatter. Mm-hmm. So when, you know, those who touch...
And this is John Carpenter's, like, hey, I like it. I like the concept of antimatter. Maybe I can write something about that.
That's literally what this film is.
So they hook computers to it and start getting, like, weird readings.
Yes. Yeah, weird readings, they start having these weird dreams.
Now, before too long, some of the goo escapes. And I'd like to talk about this.
The escaping goo?
Yes. And maybe we need to have an intervention for John Carpenter before he dies. Because, John, this is a little over the top, even for you. I mean, I know you did the thing, you, like, started the trend where babysitters who sin get murdered and shit, but, John, when you're turning a girl evil, do not spooge in her face with evil. And then, when she is evil, don't just give her a crap ton more hairspray and take away her glasses.
That's another evil. They lose their glasses, evil.
You can't watch that scene and not feel a little dirty inside where she's just looking up and the camera angle is almost her in like a prayer position where her face is just looking up and then, boop, goo just hoses her down in the face. And you're just like, well, that's disturbing.
I didn't phase me too much.
It's... just,
it's obvious, it's not like...
it's just a big, huge metaphor.
Yeah.
Satan came on her.
Yeah, okay.
And that made her evil.
Yes.
Just want to clarify that.
I mean, I don't... It's definitely a sexual element, but I don't think it's...
it's hugely sexual.
Yeah, but it's not... I feel like you're implying that he's anti-sex...
I'm not implying he's anti-sex. I just mean the allegory is too over the top. It just is. It could have been subtler. Like,
it could have been less subtle, too.
A hammer to the head is less subtle than this.
You could have had it go into between your legs. It would make that even more less subtle.
Hey. This isn't Evil Dead 2.
No, this is a classier film.
It would have to be. But in any case... once the first person gets taken over by evil, things kind of go pear-shaped. But we should clarify that the reason why this works as a film is because once more, in a Carpenter film, you've been positioned into an unescapable prison.
Yes, they can't leave the church.
They can't leave it because?
Well, this evil can apparently control homeless people.
Really well.
Yeah.
And bugs.
Yes, bugs and the homeless.
So all the homeless just kind of barricade everything.
Yes. And if you try to leave, you get a bite through your chest.
And really quickly, through lesbian scenes and whatnot, more people are taken over by Satan's goo.
Yes.
To the point where, what, you have Donald Pleasance, crap, who's, is it Victor Wong?
Yeah.
You have Donald Pleasance, Victor Wong, mustache dude... and a redhead.
Redhead and, yeah.
And, I'm sorry, and...
and the girl is A-Chen. Yeah. Richard Wong is, A-Chen.
Oh, I'm sorry, A-Chen. Who's the,
Dennis Dunn?
Thank you, Dennis Dunn. So, like, the evil takes over the one blonde.
Yeah.
And just, like, completely goes...
She becomes the, sort of, the vessel for the Prince of Darkness at this point.
And she's cooking.
Yeah.
It takes a little while to...
it takes a while to get, you know, to fully take over.
In the meantime, you have Dennis Dunn.
Was that his name? That's the Asian kid, yeah.
I don't know why I can't remember to keep that name in my head, but I'm having trouble.
You really are. Walter?
He's in a closet.
Yes.
And apparently, his only motivation for getting out, like, comes when he's in immediate danger. Like, until he is in immediate danger... he has no interest in helping get out.
He has escaped the plot of this film, which he's fine with. I understand. I was like, you know what? I don't want to deal with the plot. I'm going to stay in the wall.
I just mean, like, as soon as these demonically possessed people actually start, like, coming into the closet to chase after him, he's like, oh, let me rip apart this wall.
Yeah, that'll do the effort. Yes, he has fear strength.
He could have been doing that at any point.
Fear strength.
But it's, and they get you pretty good at that point. Once you was infected by the goo, you just open your mouth and hose someone down with more goo.
Yep.
And then
you get the next one.
So it's pretty brutal, and killing them doesn't seem to really make an impact.
No,
they just stand back up.
When you get Satan power, you get full recovery.
Sure.
You've traded your consciousness for healing factor.
And this is where the plot falls down a little for me. Like, as soon as like all the preamble is done, there's not much plot.
No, once they've discussed the idea, that's about it.
Right, it's just a couple of chase scenes through the building, and then Satan.
Yes.
Who attempts to summon his father through a little pocket mirror. That's too small for Satan. Satan woke up stupid.
Satan needs bigger space.
So he goes to another wall, girl shoves Satan girl through, and they're both trapped in the mirror dimension.
Yes. Because they break the mirror.
Right, because they break the mirror. And then there's, of course, like any movie, there's some, oh, is it done? Is it not done? I think the coolest part of this film is the dreams.
Yeah, the dream is the coolest part, because it has the creeping terror that you had in the thing.
It not only does it have that creeping terror, but it's an actual novel idea. Because you find out that people from 1999 have used what technology they've cobbled together to send back psychic transmissions.
Yes.
Saying, hey, whatever's happening back there right now, fucking stop it.
Fix this problem.
And it's cool because at first, you just see this man walking out of the church and that's how the world ends. And then at the end of it, you have Mustache Boy dreaming, and that man has become a woman. Now, the thing we don't know is it we're sending a dream from the future? Or is it, you know, he's just having a bad dream? Because, you know, that stuff's all stuck in his head.
Yeah. I mean, the implication in the film is that they were sending, you're getting more details as you got closer to the initials, the transmission.
You are, but the transmission changed.
Yes.
You didn't notice that, look back.
It does change.
Because it was a man. And then it's not a man. So.
They might have made some change, yeah. We don't know, yeah, we don't know if.
It could be real, it could not be real. But.
John Carpenter knows.
No, he doesn't.
He knows.
I don't think he does.
He's not going to tell you.
I don't think he gives a shit. He's done. He's just like, yeah, done.
Prince of Darkness 2.
Oh, God.
My final film.
Oh, my God. That would be amazing. I'd watch it in the theater. If he had the balls to do that.
He hasn't made a film since 2010. He's pretty much retired from filmmaking.
Right. And if he had the balls to just be like, I'm coming back with The Prince of Darkness 2, I'd be first in line. And I don't think I'll ever watch this movie again. No, I don't think I'll ever watch this movie again. I'm like thinking about it real hard. I'm like, are you sure you watch a lot of really bad movies?
You say that. I'm going to come in one day, I've flown in, surprise you, on the TV. One TV is Madpool. One TV is Prince of Darkness.
Well, I mean, if you came and knocked on my door and said, hey, I'm in town for, you know, 6 hours, want to watch Prince of Darkness, I'd be like, are you sure you don't want to watch something else? He'd be like, no, it has to be Prince of Darkness, I'm leaving. I'd be like, all right, I guess we're watching Prince of Darkness.
No, I will show up out of the blue, and in your shame, put Prince of Darkness on.
No, I won't. There are so many other movies that would be on.
Oh, God! Why, Prince of Darkness? What have you done to yourself?
This movie made $14.1 million in the box office. It was definitely a success.
A minor one. This is another one that more survived, though, in the home video market. It made money, but it didn't make a ton of money.
The Thing only made 19.6 and cost, like...
A pile, yeah. This movie was clearly much more cheaply made.
Yeah, the Thing cost 5 times as much as this movie.
Yeah.
Now, the characters weren't that likable. And not like, when you watch Halloween, he does a good, like, there's a good
The
job
characters are much stronger in Halloween.
Yes. Even if you don't like them, they're characters you maybe give a shit about.
This one, the cool thing is some of the effects are pretty cool.
Yeah, the effects are pretty interesting, actually.
And the idea. I think the sort of alien theology on top of it.
No, there's some good ideas in there, and I love. Oh God, there was a point where one of the characters was just like, hey, "Did you miss it? God's an alien." Just like that offhand, like, yeah, you're missing the god alien talk in there. You should really catch up.
Which, I mean, and I'm so used to films as this, you know, the science-religion conflict. It's like, no, this one is just... Really, just hide in that until science got good enough.
Hmm.
Then we tell science.
No, there's some interesting parts here, which makes the execution of the movie more disappointing.
Had there been a better screenwriter, I think, that probably would have been a stronger film.
No, definitely. If they could have made the characters a little stronger and give us a little more plot.
A little more plot to the end. It just made the ending a little more there.
Yeah. And I think that I would have liked the dreams to be somewhat more expanded on. Because unless, like, in the theater, I doubt you really picked up enough on it. Because they're really quick. You really have to pay attention and... Like, there are a few times where, like, a rewind was in order.
Yeah, if you blink, you can't miss them.
Mm-hmm. But it's a short movie. It's not even 2 hours.
Yeah, it's a good rental.
It's definitely worth an SD rental. I don't really think you need an HD rental unless you want to pay that extra dollar.
It does look, I would say, a little nicer. Because, again, especially with an effects film, with practical effects, you do get a benefit to HD.
Mm-hmm. But in any case, I would definitely rent it at least once.
The weirdest thing is the extra on the Blu-ray. Alice Cooper talks about being a Christian now. Which is so fucking weird.
That is weird.
Yeah. Would not have called him as being a Christian.
And I would argue that it's a part, like, if you wanted to do like a little film fest, mini film festival for yourself, this being the second part of the apocalypse show is just not necessarily the worst idea.
No.
Like, they don't go well in any meaningful way, but pairing John Carpenter is not bad.
Well, you go from most alien to least alien, and then most supernatural to least supernatural. You know, from least supernatural to most supernatural.
No, definitely.
Yeah.
No, that's a good way to map it out.
Because this one's sort of a cross between, you know, sci-fi and supernatural.
Absolutely. There's aliens, but there's also, like, mirror dimensions.
But essentially, but there's mirror dimensions, there's Vorlon. Yeah. Essentially, this is saying that Jesus was a Vorlon.
Yeah.
Essentially, you know, to spoil Babylon 5, Jesus was a Vorlon.
Spoilers. Alright, so, and, like, that's really the only thing I can...
Yeah, this
watch
is,
it once.
This is, I think, the least interesting of the films.
It is. It definitely is. This is the one where, like, we're moving on to In the Mouth of Madness, and that, while...
We're gonna have fun discussing this one, because this is... Speaking of films that are gonna be hard to, like... piece apart.
This one comes through to us 7 years later.
Yeah, it's a decent bit later.
And it's pretty fucked up, and it's gonna be difficult to really discuss in any meaningful way. Because it's fucked up.
It is. This is the hardest one to really talk about.
And he definitely, like Michael DeLuca does the screenplay, and he,
he has also done almost not know where the screenplay's past this.
Yeah, no.
He is mostly a film producer.
And I mean, I find, like, I'm going to spoil my end. Like, I'll watch this again, but it's a really weird movie.
It's definitely the weirdest of the three.
And it's weak in weird ways. Like, the screenplay is weak. Like, is it the acting?
No, the acting isn't bad.
You know what it is? Part of me, I don't necessarily think I like Sam Neill as an actor.
You were stoked about Sam Neill going into this one.
I was. And then as I'm watching it, I'm like, you know...
Oh, right. That motherfucker.
I didn't realize before, but I think I might have a problem with Sam Neill.
It's like one of those things where, like, you always think you like that food and you keep trying it.
Yeah.
And then you go, wait, I hate this. I hate carrot cake.
Sam Neill is my candy corn.
Everyone thinks I like candy corn and they keep trying it.
And then I don't like it. And I'm like, oh, I don't like that. Why would I ever eat that again? And then I try it next year.
And then, fuck, he's still candy corn.
But I don't know that he's the best actor there.
No.
But in any case, it is Prince. It's In the Mouth of Madness. Which is Lovecraftian, I guess.
It's distinctly trying to be, like, play on Lovecraft, play on Stephen King a bit.
Yeah, that's fun, where they, like, they almost diss Stephen King a little bit.
They almost diss it, but it's clearly, like, had they been able to get the rights to just make this film about Stephen King.
Yeah. I mean, I guarantee you he's chortling in his basement watching this once in a few years.
Yeah. Sitting on the throne of money.
But he's definitely like...
On my throne of fat stacks.
He's like, if only I had this power.
Like, oh, I turned down. I could have gotten $1 million to put my name in this film. I could have been Sutter Kane.
But Sutter Kane's such a good, like, name.
It is a great name. Really, he's the best part of this film.
I love that Charlton Heston is in this fucking movie.
I don't know why. I don't know how they got Charlton Heston in this film. I mean, he's in it for 5 minutes.
Right, but you know, he just walks on the set, he's like, alright, you pussies, settle down, we're shooting my scenes.
He immediately elevates the entire scene. I don't care what his politics were.
He's so weird.
He doesn't, like, he can't not be Moses when he's talking.
Alright, so the most important thing I can tell you about this movie is, and this is something that my brain has trouble wrapping around, even though it seems very easy, is that Sam Neill plays a man named John Trent, who is not the author of any books. In this movie, he's an insurance investigator.
Yes.
Sutter Kane is a horror novelist in these movies. And for some reason, my brain keeps on wanting to make Sam Neill the writer.
No.
He is not the writer.
Sam Neill is just an insurance man.
Yes. And he really likes fucking busting people. He's just like, nope. People suck and I'm going to catch them.
You know
sucking.
What? You gotta do what you love.
And he does.
Yeah.
He does.
And he thinks that this whole... So Sutter Kane has essentially gone missing.
But
his team can't get in touch with him.
But we start with the insane asylum.
Yes.
Psychiatric hospital.
Yes. It's a water treatment plant. That building is a water treatment plant.
Okay.
Really cool, really terrifying looking water treatment plant.
Very terrifying. So Sam Neill plays John Trent. John Trent is a patient in a psychiatric hospital who we catch him when he's trying to escape. Kicking out orderly in the balls and all that. And then he has a change of heart. I think he hears a little bit more that things are getting worse out there. And we don't know what that means.
You just know things are getting worse.
And he gets visited by David Warner.
Who at this point had played Gul Madrid.
See, I see David Warner, and I don't, when I see him out of makeup, I just think Star Trek 5.
See, five.
Is it 5?
He's human, he's Gorkon in 6.
He's the human?
He's the human in 5.
Okay, 5.
Yeah.
I think 5.
When I see him, it's 5. When I hear him, it's Gul Madrid.
In any case... Once more, he plays with someone who's supposed to mess with your mind.
Yeah.
And he has the voice for it, frankly.
Or he's Ra's al Ghul in the Batman Animated Series.
Okay. And he gets Trent to tell his story. Trent, who, by the way, between having escaped, has gone batshit more nuttier and drawing crosses all over everything, including himself.
With a crayon.
With a black crayon. I can't help but feel like maybe he had more than one.
I never seen you draw yourself with a crayon.
I don't know. You should try it again.
I've tried as a child. It's hard to do.
I can just see you, like, as a kid, like, running experiments. Like,
nope, crayon didn't
experiment
work.
One.
Marker, yes. Crayon, no. Marker, yes. Crayon, no.
Well, I didn't say there were long experiments.
Got to do a replicas to get this to be statistically valid. The p-value ain't good enough on this one.
Alright, so Sutter Kane has disappeared. Sam Neill gets attacked by an axe-wielding maniac.
Yeah, like one does.
Who later we find out to be Sutter Kane's agent.
Yes. And he was reading a chapter. They read like a chapter of the book.
Yeah, and he went fucking nuts.
Yes, read one chapter and you lose it.
But later on we figured out that he went nuts in the way he did... Because he learned John Trent has a destiny, and that he, through him, basically the world's going to end. So he tried to nip it in the bud.
Yeah, if you kill John Trent, the world doesn't end.
But really, all she does is help the plot along.
Yeah.
Which is really a theme of this movie.
Whenever someone has a destiny, you don't tell them about it, because if you tell them about it, then they know about it. Then they do it.
Or try not to do it, and we'll still be done anyway.
Yes. You can't escape destiny.
So, Trent is suspicious of everyone, including the publishers.
Especially the publishers.
So, Charlton Heston's there, along with Julie Carmen, who plays Linda Stiles, and she's Sutter Kane's editor. So they're like, hey, he disappeared, and we want you to find him. We need to find him, because otherwise, we're going to need the insurance payout on this book, because he sells millions. Millions of copies.
Billions of copies in print.
He outsells King on his worst day. Stephen King's going, oh.
He's going, yeah, sure. It's fiction.
Anything can happen in fiction.
Puts out three novels by the end of the sentence.
He slowed down a lot.
Yeah, but this is also mid-90s.
It's true. He only writes like a... He writes a novel himself a year and, like, helps two people, like, twice.
He put out three Stephen King novels and two, John Bachman novels? What's the pen name?
Yeah, something Bachman.
It's like
Richard Bachman.
And two Richard Bachman novels by the end of the film.
He doesn't write in a Richard Bachman anymore.
Not even. Yeah, maybe mid-90s, is that the Richard Bachman era?
Yeah.
Okay, so yeah. While this film was being produced.
I think late 80s, early 90s.
Cranked out a bunch of novels.
Sure. So, in any case, he's like, I'm going to find this guy. I'm going to get you your book, because this is all hoax. So, through weird things, he puts together the book covers, discovers a map, and finds this place, this Hobbs End. Now, Hobbs End is a lot like, I don't remember what they are, but Stephen King has, like, two different places, one in Colorado and one in Maine.
This is the Maine.
And this is, like, the
This is the main one, because, again, when there's creepy shit that happens, it's in New England. It's always New England.
Yeah, I'm good with that.
It's close, but just far enough away.
So, he and the editor, Linda, go. Like, they're driving.
Yep.
It's not on a map. Whatever, they'll find it. They have a weird book cover map.
Yeah, they've conveniently figured this out.
Which leads us to what I feel is probably the scariest part of the movie. And it's a movie full of, like, weird shit and nasty things, but...
But none of it's jump-scary. Like, none of it's it'll make you uncomfortable, like, you won't be suddenly scared by it.
This is not a jump-scare movie. This is a slowly make you more and more uncomfortable.
Yeah, this is like a Lovecraft novel in that way, of, like, things are slowly cranking up the heat.
Absolutely. So, nothing too bad happens when he's driving, but then he goes to sleep, and Linda Stiles drives. Now, this is the first time that she's been our POV. He's asleep, so she's our eyes and ears forever, but she's experiencing more experience. Which I feel is important, considering what happened to her.
Yes.
So, in any case, so she drives, and we get some really surreal scenes along a dark highway. Of, like, bike riders and aging and just, like, really creepy, like, imagery. To the point where they hit a woman. And with the culmination of all these weird things, all of a sudden they're both in the car and it stays on.
Yep.
And they're in the middle of, like, they're right outside of town, I think.
Yeah, they just have to, like, the rest of a tunnel and one behind, in front of a tunnel and behind, you know, in front of the town.
Right. So, and he's just, and Trent's just like, hey, you found it, good job. And she's all like...
Kill me! Kill me!
Yeah, what the fuck's happening? I don't know. So, and then, like, the town's all creepy. The town's really, really creepy.
The town is exactly what you think every room in the town is like.
What's the creepiest part of the town for you?
I think it's the hotel lady.
Yeah? Yeah? What part? My creepiest part was where you find out, like, her husband...
is just dragging... He's, like, naked attached to her?
Yes.
Yeah.
Hands down behind, because Trent keeps on hearing some scuffing, and doesn't, like, think anything of it. He walks out, and they pan behind the counter, and her, like, slave-dressed husband, like, naked husband, is handcuffed to her ankle.
Yeah.
And she, like, kicks him idly. And you're just like, oh, shit!
Yeah. Sutter Kane should have been murdered years ago for thinking of these ideas.
Right, and I'm like, why is everyone reading these novels? These are disturbing!
And you're like,
I read King.
You're like, oh, I would have bought that one.
I would not have bought that one.
You would have bought it, and you would have, like, found that page and they just burned it.
No, that's true. Like, I buy every Stephen King novel, but I don't necessarily finish every Stephen King novel. Sometimes you get to a point and you're like,
nope,
I'm good.
Just throw it in like the fireplace. Oh, gotta burn that one. Can't let that one escape.
So, through various things happen, there's creepy kids, like, mutated children. Like just
yeah, all the children are mutants. It's like Dagon, kind of, in that way.
Right. Everyone's saying, oh, I see you, and all these kinds of weird things. They all, there's this culmination where, like, the redneck hillbilly revenge squad comes on the church, demanding their child back from Sutter Kane, and, like,
who has taken over the creepiest church.
Right.
The second creepiest church, not being here to the church from Prince of Darkness.
True. No, it was beautiful because there's this scene where Sam Neill's just like, you're a moron, Linda. None of this is real. If this was real, there'd be a dark, foreboding church with black spires outside this window. And he opens the window and it's a dilapidated farmhouse. And she's like, well, if you would have read, you'd know it's out here. She doesn't at the distance. It's this horrible monstrosity of a church.
Also a real church.
I'm sure. She's just like, oh my god, it's evil. So, like, they don't get the kid, and then, like, that's when you first see Sutter Kane. Because the kid's there, and he looks like he's constipated, I think.
Like children do.
And the door's open and shut, and it's the kid. And open and shut, and it's the kid. And they open and shut, and it's the kid. And they open and shut, and it's Sutter Kane in his wild-haired madness. It's
just perpetual bedhead.
Like, this is what I would say. For those of you who actually do read Stephen King, if they would have cast the guy who played Sutter Kane as the Man in Black or like Randall Flagg or any of those, that bad guy in Stephen King novels, perfect fit.
Still alive.
No, they already cast McConaughey. Matthew McConaughey is the Man in Black.
No, I mean, I guess he's 75 now. Jürgen Prochnow now.
Hmm.
So we just have this in the Dune movie for him.
He is a scary motherfucker.
He elevates the film.
He does.
Him and Viggo are the best parts of this film.
Yeah. So I forget exactly what happens, but Linda gets exposed to the novel. To the final.
Like forcibly exposed to the novel.
He literally headbutts her into the novel.
Yeah.
Which apparently is enough.
I think the novel reads itself to her at that point.
Right.
Because it's glowing. It is, like, literally, in the film, it is essentially a light beneath the first page.
Right. And so she's no longer nice protagonist Linda Stiles. She's, like, Sutter Kane's love slave.
Yeah.
Servant. And that's, once she leaves, once her brain departs, all of a sudden, Trent is just he just starts falling apart.
He breaks at that point. Because he has no ground to reality.
Right. Like, he doesn't have another person that's real, so it's all fucking messed up. And I would akin it to, if anyone's ever seen 1308?
Is that the one with Samuel Jackson's in it, but he's not the main character, yeah.
Samuel Jackson and
forget the start of the film.
The guy from Gross Point Blank is.
Oh, why the fuck can't I remember the name?
God damn it!
We always do this every podcast. Who the fuck is the guy in that other movie? Arquette. It's not an Arquette, is it?
No, it's not an Arquette. It's a John Cusack.
Okay.
So, which is a short story, which is also very scary. But if you've seen it, that's the kind of thing that starts happening to Trent, where, like, just, like, the environment itself starts working against him to drive him insane, along with some help by more sentient things.
But actually at this point, we have established that the village is written and controlled by Sutter Kane.
It is. Sutter, like, we basically now know that Sutter Kane is an author slash god.
Yes.
Like, whatever he's writing is enabling reality shifts, and it's... But it's not necessarily his power, it's things empowering him from beyond.
Yeah, he's been empowered with this, that his writing, it's a bit convoluted, I think.
Yeah, it could be the way I describe it, but it could also be argued that he is creating these things beyond that are going to destroy the world.
Yeah, there's a bit of a chicken and the egg kind of question.
And he also, so at the pinnacle of the film, he crosses and joins them. He literally rips open his face.
Yeah, like a book.
Like a book.
It's a really bad effect.
It is, but it's also kind of cool.
If it was better, it'd be really cool. But it's also like 1994 CG we're talking about here.
Yes. And he says, Trent, he controls everyone and controls Trent. He says, you are going to bring my book to the population and begin this process so that what I've done here in Hobbs End will just be done to the world. And obviously Trent doesn't like that.
Because this is a horrible place. The walls are made of meat.
Hopefully.
Well, it depends on what kind of meat.
And so, like, he tries to escape several times. Like, he tries to leave the town. He can never leave the town. He tries to run people over. He just crashes. Finally, he's given a copy of this book, told to run, and he runs through a tunnel being chased. He falls to the earth, or the meat, and finds himself on a road. A nice plain road where, I believe, where they found the town, like, on the other side of that bridge, but there is no more bridge.
Yeah, I think it was supposed to be essentially where he was.
And he doesn't have Linda with him, he's just alone, he has no car, he wanders towards the highway. After, you know, meeting a kid who's just like, hey, where's the highway? By the way, have you ever heard of Hobbs Cove or Inderworld?
Have you heard of Creepy Town?
And the kid's like, no. And like, good. That's great. And he drops the book and wanders away. And then the book is delivered to him in the hotel or the motel.
See, as soon as he arrives.
And he burns it. And then he goes to report to Charleston Heston. He's just like, you're nut. He's like, I don't know any Linda Stiles. I never sent any Linda Stiles with you. And you brought me this book 7 weeks ago.
The movie comes out tomorrow.
Right. The book has been released. The movie comes out tomorrow. This is done.
It's a good turnaround.
Yeah, I'm doing an amazing turnaround.
See, that's a 2001 A Space Odyssey kind of movement right there.
Mm. That Jaws was pretty close, too, I think.
Was it?
Like, not like 7 weeks, but...
Like, it wasn't concurrent.
The book came out, and they're just... No, it wasn't concurrent. But the book came out, like, the year before, and they're like, Jaws, do it!
That's not going to get a 4... Yeah, that's when you could do that. That kind of stuff.
So, in any case... So he wanders around. He's quite mad at this point. He winds up in the hospital because he sees that the book's been released, and he goes fucking nuts. And then while in the hospital, like this is like the psychiatrist. He finishes a story. The psychiatrist leaves, and disaster happens. And it's never really see what, like you see. His thing opens, and there's chaos in the streets, and there's emergency radio warnings about things that are happening. But, like, he just walks through it.
I think it's spread from him, and essentially, that first ring is now completely dead.
Right.
The outer rings are now where the problems are.
So he goes to the movies, so he can watch In the Mouth of Madness, the movie. Which is...
The movie we just watched.
Yes, which is the movie we watched.
Which is the scene with him.
And he starts laughing hysterically, maniacally, and cut to some actual decent rock and roll.
Yeah, this is kind of weird for a John Carpenter. It's a very rock soundtrack. It's not the usual synth soundtrack.
Right, and I didn't mind it, but I saw some people critiquing it. I'm like, whatever.
Like, you know what, that's a very 90s critique of like, but you know what, this is also a very 90s film with where it lands. And
They would have criticized synthesizer music.
Yeah, oh, yeah, well then it would have been, why are you using old-timey synthesizer music?
Right, yeah?
Yeah, that's what the someone would have posted on a Usenet board.
So, and that's it. They actually do a reasonable job. They had ample opportunity to break the fourth wall before this. They really, really did. And they held it to the end.
It's good that they hold it till the last minute. It wouldn't have worked another, you know, it would have ruined the end then.
Absolutely. But it's an interesting movie.
And this is the Apocalypse Trilogy one where the world actually ends.
Right. The world definitely ends here.
Yes.
The world probably ends in the second one, and I give it a 50-50 shot in the thing.
Yeah, we'll allow interpretation on the thing if it ended.
So, like, yeah, like, but the world definitely ends here.
Yes.
So, what we've learned is, scientifically ending the world, hard. Mystically ending the world, easier.
Yes, you should have a very good writer. More popular than the Bible. Specifically more popular than the Bible.
He absolutely has to be more popular than the Bible.
Because by the logic of this film, if enough people believed in the Bible and truly believed, that would be real.
But yes, by the precedence of this film, if Mr. Rogers had written a book and every person on the planet had bought it.
And bought into the ideas of it.
Yes, and like just was like, this is the best book ever. Mr. Rogers would be our god.
Yes.
It's the world I'd live in.
That's such a great world. I want that world. I want Fred Rogers' god.
Yeah, he's pretty cool.
But again, it's also a very active god.
True.
It's not a sort of a deistic, passive god. This is the theistic, like, active, you know, on the levers.
Yeah, this is...
But instead, this is the Stephen King is god universe.
This is... Make no mistake, and I don't want to give you the wrong interpretation of this... This is a hokey movie, and the acting is all across the board over the top. There's no not. This is right up there with something that should be lampooned in a theater with three comedians.
This probably, if it wasn't John Carpenter, which has a little bit more bump in his credibility, it would be in that caliber. But I think giving it, the only actor I think who gets away with the sort of overacting is Sutter Kane.
Because he's
pulling the levers of the universe.
He's amazing.
Yeah.
He's amazing. I will watch this movie again. It'll go on my list for when it drops down to, like, I might as well buy it. It's the same cost of rent. Like, I can easily see being able to get a $5 Blu-ray of this at some point.
This thing is worth showing people for the ideas of it.
No, I've liked the ideas of all three of these movies. This movie is definitely... kind of that fourth wall breaking, like, it is a Lovecraftian animal.
It also works in a Lovecraftian way. Like, I feel like a lot of Lovecraft films don't work because the way he writes doesn't translate well to screen.
No, because he writes, some people would say boringly, I say subtly.
Yeah, subtly, very, very descriptively in ways that can't, you know, that aren't meant to be seen.
There are certain... there are certain authors who can write in a way that will actually, like, I would argue that it's difficult to find an author who can scare you. Like, the written word
is... It's tougher.
It's difficult to master. There are many more visual tricks and auditory tricks you can use to enhance that. Whereas, to scare you with the written word is challenging.
You have to move slowly to scare someone.
Mm-hmm. And, it's been done rarely, but if it's been done, it's by Lovecraft or King.
Yeah.
And a couple other authors.
Just that there are others, but those have sort of been the modern... there's a lineage there of...
Well, that's just
ideas.
Me. Like,
yeah.
I'm sure that other people find other things scary, but it's difficult for you to scare me.
There's also a lineage there of ideas.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And King would be the first to admit, like, he's written homages to Lovecraft that, like, he's just
I mean, authors are good authors are good about saying, yeah, this is where I got these from. Go read these two.
Right. And King's pretty good about it. If you ever read any of his short stories, most of his anthologies have, like, intros where he's like, this is where this came from.
Yeah, I mean, that's just sort of good... Because at the end of the day, you want other authors out there if you're a good author, you want other authors out there to play with your ideas. And you can play with their ideas.
Good writers borrow, great writers steal.
Somewhat.
But if we were giving the Olympics, and these were the only three contenders, the thing would be our gold, Prince of Darkness would be our bronze, and The Mouth of Madness is a solid silver.
Yeah, and I think no one's going to argue, and of the three... Everyone should watch The Thing.
No, everyone should own The Thing.
Yeah, The Thing is a film worthy of anyone's collection.
You should watch these other two.
The other two are definitely worth watching.
And depending
on your mileage, going to vary on both of them.
Depending on what really entertains you, you may very well find that In the Mouth of Madness is worth owning too.
I think the other two are tougher to justify.
Yeah. You have to watch them and decide for yourself.
Yeah.
Like, I'll probably end up buying In the Mouth of Madness, but that's because it's so fucking wacky, and some of the scare scenes are so clever.
It's also the only of the three that I would like to see remade. Like, I could see this an improved remake on this film.
And The Right Hand's absolutely.
Yeah.
But I could see that. Like, a little less hokey, a little more.
Like, update the effects, less hokey, you know, you could bring in new ideas on it.
And not Sam Neill.
Yeah.
I'm sure, I actually...
And same Sutter Kane. Just Sutter Kane, same actor.
Just CGI him right in there.
No, just have him come back, he's still alive, just a little older.
I'm not being very fair, actually Sam Neill did a really good job.
He did a good job, but...
But I don't particularly love his acting style, that I've reacquainted myself with it. You could peel him out of this and put him in the Jurassic Park, and when you play the same character in whatever movie you're in.
But then that role could easily be swapped out by other actors.
No, absolutely. But in the meantime, our next delve is a monster.
Yes. It is the Russian film Solaris, based on the novel by the Polish author Stanislaw Lem.
It is, for those of you who watch along with us, and don't wait for our reviews, it is the 1972 Solaris.
Yes, the Russian one.
Because there's like three.
Yes. The Tarkovsky film.
It is 166 minutes.
It's shorter than any of the Lord of the Rings theatrical cuts.
Stop arguing things like that. That's not a good argument.
It's not a bad argument.
You're not making as convincing an argument as you think you are.
People watch the entire set of Lord of the Rings in a day.
In the meantime, we've got some fun stuff coming up. I have no idea what the order's going to be, but when we know, you'll know.
Yes.
And in the meantime, because of just personal logistics, we're probably going to be taking a little summer hiatus.
Which happens every summer for logistics anyway.
I don't know that that's true, but...
We slow down because, like,
we slow down during Anime Night.
Yeah, I mean, next time on Otakon.
But we have lots of fun ideas for when we come back, and in the meantime, we're still going to be trying to eke out a Babelcast once in a while.
We'll probably take early July off, and then we'll be back hopefully by late July.
Which is great, because I still have to watch Attack on Titan, and that's what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
So in the meantime...
And by that point, I can watch season 2 as well.
There you go.
Which is also available... The dub is already done for that, so it's been on TV.
Okay. In the meantime, it's becoming summer, so those of you who enjoy the Daystar, have fun with that. Those of you who don't, you can huddle with me in my air-conditioned dark living room.
It is pretty dark in here.
Bye!
Goodbye from the Daystar!
What was in that movie?
Which one?
In the Mouth of Madness.
Where was Willem Dafoe in the mouth? I think.
Wasn't he the psychiatric orderly?
Was that Willem Dafoe?
I think so.
I'm already recording this. I'm going to put this at the end of the episode.
That's like during our credits?
Yeah.
I'm not going to look. If it's not him, it's the guy I was confused with him.
No, Willem Dafoe wasn't in this.
I need to know, who's the guy? Is that really him? No, that's not him. That's a kid. No, there was... I don't know what his name is, though.
Not Willem Dafoe.
John Glover.
Okay.
The guy who I confused with Willem Dafoe.
No, Willem Dafoe haunts dreams. Everyone knows that.
I believe John Glover is Willem Dafoe's long-lost younger brother.
Yeah, well, you'll get your Willem Dafoe soon enough.
And what?
You'll find out.
He asks with trepidation and fear.
He'll be wearing a leather apron.